What's up? Welcome to episode 2 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I'm your host, Kofi Outlaw, and I am once again here with my co-hosts, Matt Mueller, Brandon Davis. Say hello to the people.
What up, peoples?
Hello.
People. What was that?
I said, what up, peoples, because I wanted to be first.
Almost just flinched. You owe me two. Again. Oh, my goodness.
That's fair. Okay, now that we've met everybody once again, this week we're going to be talking a little bit of Marvel, a little bit of DC, and then we're going to go deep into some WWE, and we are going to mount a defense of comic book culture itself. So that's going to be really exciting for that. Stay tuned, heroes of the culture, us.
I thought it was Joe Budden for a minute.
Okay, we moving on? First up, we've gotten word that Disney and Marvel are making plans for their Disney Plus streaming service, and they're bringing a lot of new Marvel and Star Wars TV shows, some high-profile projects, to the service. And now we've heard that they're going to be, quote-unquote, spending generously to make these shows. And this kind of just brings up a general discussion point that we've been wondering since we first heard that Disney Plus is going to be taking over these kind of Marvel Cinematic Universe and big Star Wars TV shows, which is, what does spending generously like mean for Disney? Are these going to be TV shows that can actually stand up to the Marvel movies and Star Wars movies, or do we expect them to still be kind of TV budgeted, you know, projects? It's different in this case. I mean, we've had broadcast versions of Marvel shows. We've had Marvel on streaming services like Netflix or Hulu. But we've never seen what happens when Disney's putting these things out in-house for their streaming service that they are building for to be this kind of Netflix killer. And they're bringing in official actors from the Marvel Cinematic Universe, like Elizabeth Olsen's Scarlet Witch or Tom Hiddleston's Loki or Paul Bettany's Vision, I believe. And so they're getting the official actors. And now we have to kind of create the same aesthetic as the movie, right?
Yeah.
Like, we got to that ups the demand. You can't have Scarlet Witch in a bad wig for the TV show and like just flinging her arms around and like,
I mean, you can. That's called
show.
Inhumans.
Oh, wow.
So that's bad.
Inhumans. RIP. But getting back to the serious question, do you think they're going to be producing TV shows that are on the exact level of their movies?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I don't see that big of a difference between production value from the Netflix shows to the movies. I see the disconnection in story, but I don't, I mean, they at the same time, these shows haven't demanded the scale of production, I guess. They're not going cosmic. They're not requiring tremendous visual effects, not doing anything totally crazy in that regard. I guess Iron Fist could have benefited from maybe a little bit of a bigger budget with some of those things.
Well, let's just put this out here. There is a reason, like, these Netflix shows, every single season has one where the hero doesn't leave, like, a single setting or a ridiculous New York apartment that nobody could ever afford.
That's called the budget.
Yeah, that's called the budget, just so we're clear. And, like, Iron Fist had one dramatic showdown episode that was a dinner party in season 2. Where a bunch of rivals got together and had dinner in Chinatown, and that was like the drama. So there are budget tricks that they've kind of
that's sure, like when music videos do the artist thing against like a wall for the entire video, and you're like, oh, they're out of the budget.
Yep, ran out of the money.
Yeah. Like, well, I mean, if you're doing a Loki series, people will immediately identify if it's cheaper because we've been trained to see him cinematically. So
yeah, and that's kind of my question. In so, all this.
But maybe they're going to be smarter than Netflix in not stretching this to 13 episodes just for the sake of stretching it to 13. Give it. What if you give it the same budget Netflix gives these 13 episode series, but do it in 8 episodes
or 6? I would say
or 6, yeah. Even 6 episodes. You get 6 hours of Loki. I don't know how much story we even have to tell with Loki. 6 hours seems like enough at this point.
That's the one I'm least excited about.
Listen, I love Tom Hiddleston, and I do enjoy Loki, but, like, he's been in...
Yeah, he's just... It's just
he's, has he been
him.
In...
I mean, he's got the most biggest extension of life out of everybody in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Has he been in more movies... I might be wrong, but I feel like this is a possibility. Has he been in more movies than Tony Stark?
Oh, I don't know.
He's been in Thor, Thor 2, Thor 3, the first Avengers, the third Avengers. He was in... Is that it? Is that all of them?
Yeah. I think that's
and then, I mean, you have Tony Stark and three Iron Mans and three Avengers. Okay, so Tony Stark is in more. Yeah. But, like, Loki is the cosmic Tony Stark, I guess. I don't know. He's been in so many things.
I mean, he's Tony Stark of villains, for
there's
sure.
There's so many... Yeah, he's the most popular villain. He's kind of responsible for the MCU, the Avengers' success, because if you don't have a great villain in the first Avengers, you don't have a great movie. And he's great, I think. And, like, obviously Thanos was the bigger villain, but you don't have a great...
But the spotlight was on Loki for that.
If you have a Steppenwolf in the first Avengers, you don't get the Avengers. you get Justice League.
Yeah. What about, I think Star Wars is kind of an easier case to cut because all you need is some kind of exterior visual effect shots for, you know, the space stuff. And then you can do a lot of interior set stuff for any Star Wars, you know, just make something look pretty sci-fi, give somebody a laser blaster. That's not hard to kind of animate or do anymore. And I'm pretty sure we'll keep major aerial space dogfights to a minimum until the show's like a little bit established. But I feel like it's an easier trick to pull to Star Wars. Also because we've never really had a Star Wars live action show. So we don't necessarily have the same expectation. Yeah.
There's well, no I mean, because like, if you're, if it comes out, let's say the Loki project, for instance, comes out and looks like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a step down.
Yeah.
Oh, so
yeah.
If it comes out looking like that, I will be disappointed. But also, what is really a generous sum of money to Disney?
Yeah.
I know. I'd love to, because like Netflix is spending what, $13 billion? Spent $13 billion in 2018. On original content.
That's the thing.
What is that to Disney?
I was trying for the longest to figure out how does Netflix stay in business with how much money they spent. I don't understand. But they spend so much money. They have, I mean, I don't know their subscriber number off the top of my head. I don't even know if that's public information. But they make that money back. And if Disney is going to compete with that, which they are, they're going to compete with Netflix. They want to be this Netflix killer, is what people are saying. They're going to come out and blow us away. I think they're not, or they're going to try to. If the storylines suck, then that's one other story. But production value is going to be there. There's no way they come out, they skimp on any of this. This is going to be stuff that's going to be like, wow, this is, and they know they have to compete with what we already saw on Netflix, so they're going to knock that out. There's no way. So whether it's Bucky and Falcon or Scarlet Witch and Vision or Loki or whatever else we might get that is finally actually fully connected to the MCU, or it's Star Wars and The Mandalorian or whatever else we see in the Star Wars universe, they're not going to skimp. The costumes, the effects, I think everything is going to be cinematic quality, at least at first.
Yeah.
Until if it doesn't work, then maybe they'll be like, maybe.
But I mean, also those characters lend themselves to this format. I mean, Falcon, yes, I mean, he's flying. But like everything is very grounded with those characters for the most part. Like, yes, Scarlet Witch uses magic. But as we've seen in the movies, it's not every second, right? She's doing other things. It's not like
she could have a mime scene.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're there.
So let me ask you this before we move on. I know Kofi probably wants to move on. Of all the titular heroes, like the A-list.
Good word.
MCU heroes, if it meant they couldn't get another movie, but you could get a series from them, bumped into my mic here. Which of those heroes?
I mean, Captain America for me, for sure.
You like to see Captain America? I'd like to see Doctor Strange.
No, I would see Captain America, and just kind of like a military, like a better version of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I would watch Captain America in anything, so I would say that probably be my pick as well.
But I just would love to see Doctor Strange because I think that could. Just 6 hours of Doctor Strange could expand the MCU.
It worked for Sherlock, man. Worked for Sherlock.
Can I get a Groot series?
No. Moving right along.
That's the nail.
Let's just jump universes because Matt ruined this one to DC because we have some major official news for the Batman for the first time in a long time. So basically what we've heard is that the Batman now has a release date. But the bigger news I think we're going to be talking about here is that we finally got an answer to this big casting question that's been hanging over the DC movie universe about whether or not Ben Affleck will be returning for another outing as Batman. And we found out that he won't be. He's gone. Bat Affleck is done. It's over. His legacy will now be set in stone as Batman v Superman in Justice League, which is...
And a cameo.
It's kind of like the Andrew Garfield Amazing Spider-Man route to superhero movie stardom, I guess. But it's going to be recast with a new actor. This Batman movie, we had details before hearing all this. We had details earlier in the week that said kind of what the nature of this next Batman movie will be. It won't necessarily be titled The Batman, like we've all been calling it for like 2 years now. but it will be kind of a noir detective story. Director Matt Reeves is interested in telling that kind of tale. And now we know we are getting a new Batman. So, I mean, we actually may, in another timeline, have had a discussion about this in an alternate universe timeline where we were discussing, you know, whether or not to recast Ben Affleck as Batman and what the challenges of that were. And I think we were discussing also now, what does that mean for this solo film? Is it connected in any way to the films that came before in the DCEU in the Snyder era? Or do you have to start fresh and just kind of make it its own thing in a standalone? Or is it going to be a prequel that's set before the events of Batman v Superman? We didn't really have an answer for like what was best in that necessarily. But I think we were all ready for, at this point, like a kind of a fresh start, right?
Yeah. In that same alternate timeline, someone might have said that it wouldn't matter if they recast the role and that they would just get a clean start. And that person in that other timeline has been proven right.
Or not have said.
That person has been proven right because this is as clean a start as you get. They rewrote the script, right? There's no trace of Affleck on this project anymore. His previous vision, he's not going to star in it.
Do we know that? Direct
it. I mean, that was the previous report, right? That Reeves started from scratch on that script. So no more Deathstroke and all that stuff got thrown out with the bathwater, from what I understand. So this is a complete clean break. I'm bummed because I am a Batflex supporter.
So
I like Batflex.
I will say that for the record, I was too.
I thought he would, like I feel about Superman, I feel that the people in these roles were not the issue. It was the vehicle that they were put in did them a disservice. I think if you put Affleck or let him direct that movie that he wanted to make, I think it would have changed a lot of people's minds about.
Yeah,
it would have removed some stigmas.
Let's just take a throwback memory here to the fact that at one point we were all jazzed because Ben Affleck was, you know, Oscar-winning director Ben Affleck was going to star in and direct and write, Oscar-winning writer, screenwriter Ben Affleck was also going to write. This was going to be like the creator-driven project.
Yes.
And the irony is now that the DC movie franchise is heavily a creator-driven kind of standalone vision type universe. And somehow, like a bad pachinko machine, Ben Affleck managed to bounce all the way down through this thing and not like land on any of the slots and just come out the bottom.
I think that's the best analogy ever.
I mean, that's kind of crazy just how far this whole thing has kind of swung. I mean, yeah, I don't know how to process. BD, take over here.
Look, man, I'm a huge fan of Ben Affleck as Batman, so I'm kind of bummed to see him go, but I'll tell you why, to answer all of your questions about should they do a prequel of young Batman, should it be connected, should it be disconnected, why I don't care about any of those answers, and that's because Matt Reeves. I think Matt Reeves is going to make an awesome movie. Look at this guy's resume. Find a movie that I don't like. You can't. And most recently, War for the Planet of the Apes, I thought it was an absolute home run. Before that, I was a huge Cloverfield fan. So, and he's made other movies that I've really enjoyed. A noir movie about Batman, the character that first debuted in Detective Comics. Like, when have we seen Batman be a true detective? He's figured stuff out in Batman vs. Superman. He kind of like did a little bit of that. And in previous outings, like with Christian Bale in The Dark Knight, we've seen versions of him finding answers and doing things like that. We haven't seen a true detective movie with Batman. So I'm super excited to get to Batman's roots. And I'm sure Matt Reeves is going to find ways to innovate this for modern technology, for today's world, if that's where it's set. When it's set, he's going to find ways to incorporate the fact that a lot of this is going to be Batman at a keyboard, Batman swiping through touchscreens and doing different things and going all CSI on it, not quite Horatio from CSI Miami with his one-liner parody-like puns. But I think you can really get some really cool stuff that Matt Reeves is going to tap into, and I really think it's going to be the closest thing to like that raw, gritty feeling that Christopher Nolan gave us, but with touches of comic book, like, homage, because there's going to be a rogue gallery. When I picture rogue gallery, I picture what they did on the CW with The Flash, man. They have embraced comic book roots on The Flash, and I hope that Matt Reeves finds a balance between going crazy with Batman villains, like, I don't know, King Shark or something crazy. And I don't want King Shark to be the villain of Batman. But like that type of, you know, crazy, wonky comic book aspect, but also finding a way to ground it in a gritty, raw Dark Knight tone. The only person who's done it is Christopher Nolan, and I know Matt Reeves is going to do something awesome with
but
that.
Like, to get off film school, but like, yeah, I mean, the history of detective noir movies are rooted basically a detective walking around and going to interview people who are freaky or eccentric or weird. I mean, that's how a lot of weird-looking people in the 40s got work. I mean, Warner Brothers, more so than a lot of other places, because Warner Brothers leaned so heavily into film noir. And like, yeah, that's what it is. It's like, film noir is supposed to be a world of freaks and like weird people and kind of crazy, you know, demented people. And we've heard Chinatown thrown around as a kind of association for what this movie could be. And that certainly is what Chinatown is. It's Jack Nicholson riding around in L.A. kind of coming up against these weird people and seeing some real dark stuff and nastiness. And
but there's already a blueprint.
Underbelly. Yeah,
there's so, already a blueprint for this.
I was just saying, like, throwing Gotham City in the Rogues on top of that is not a hard stretch.
Arkham City. Do half of Arkham City and the parts that Arkham Knight got right, that was all you did. You literally played the detective aspects of Batman in a rogues gallery, in a noir setting, but with technology as a benefit, but you still felt like he had to do something. You still felt like it wasn't one click and I find all the answers. Like, that's not interesting to
solving
watch.
Solving, like, those rooms and gather mysteries.
But he used all his tech and gadgets. Like, just do that. If you give me a half... If you do half as much as what I thought Arkham City did, I'm gold. Like, you're good for me. I don't set the bar crazy high. You can do that.
It would be crazy if, like, a Batman movie actually had, like, a mystery and a reveal and a twist.
Yeah.
And things you didn't see coming, but Batman was smart enough to figure out, like, stuff like that. That'd be nuts.
Yep. Copy the Black Panther formula a little bit. Put a crazy plot twist at the end that goes deep into the past. I mean,
yeah,
like I would love to see something like that. I think Matt Reeves is going to do something like that. I mean, it's coming in 2021. That's only 2 years away. Like, and this is going to be a trilogy. Like, or they said there's the word was it's going to be a trilogy of films from Matt Reeves, that he was developing a trilogy. I hope that is true, and I really hope that this is an origin story. I'm not going to lie. I want to see another.
You want an origin?
I want an origin story. Okay. I don't mind seeing elements of stuff we've already seen.
That's a hot take.
I want an origin story. I want to see how this... We're all familiar with Batman. Yeah, we're all familiar with Wonder Woman. But when you introduce a character on the big screen, you have to show us where this character came from.
But he's been introduced, like... How many times do I have to see the pearls and the gun and two parents
die? One more time.
I don't want to see that.
I want to just see the origin referenced in relation to whatever this new story is. Kind of how Homecoming did it. Very subtly, without really... getting too heavy, but you saw the effects of the origin story and you knew it. You knew there was a subtle hint of, you know, Uncle Ben being gone.
I'd like a little bit more. Powers. I'd like a little bit more.
We'll leave it to the fandom. We'll leave it to the fandom to discuss that. We got a little bit of time left. Let me ask you a couple questions. Do you think Ben Affleck should get a chance to show up in a DC movie somewhere down the line in some other form, whether it's like a Kingdom Come movie or a Batman Beyond movie where he's an older kind of Batman, or you think it's just done and it's over and the dream is dead?
No, but Jeffrey Dean Morgan should.
Yeah, I would love to see that.
I mean, nothing against Ben Affleck. I really enjoyed him as Batman, but it's already a convoluted enough universe, both on screen and behind the scenes. So don't confuse the general audience with, hey, this guy used to be Batman, is now someone else.
I personally think he doesn't want it. I think he's done with like superhero. More like this was such a headache for him this whole time. Yeah. I think he's done.
Sad at Ben Affleck. You will live on forever.
Who was a better meme? Sad Affleck or Kevin Feige next to Amy Pascal?
I would say sad Affleck.
Sad Affleck.
Yeah.
But that's a great
okay,
one.
Okay, final question. Do you guys want this Josh Gad Penguin thing to happen?
I trust Matt Reeves.
That's not a real question. That's not a
Thank
real
you.
Question. Don't worry about it.
Thank you.
No, nobody. Nobody needs to worry about this at this point. Let's find out who the new Batman is going to be and just try to make it through that process. Because if DC movie casting has taught us anything, wow, the internet's going to be on fire for days afterwards and whatever they announce. So strap in for that. Stay tuned now because we're going to get back after this. We're going to get into some deep dive discussion about the merits of comic books as art.
Oh, that too.
And we're also going to talk about some wrestling.
Wrestling!
Wrestling. They took her germs.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, signature vintage wash sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Okay, so
South Park reference.
Let me just put out this disclaimer first and say, you know, here at comicbook.com, we do things in all things geek culture. And if you're an 80s kid like I am, then, you know, we have this debate sometimes. But if you're an 80s kid like I am, then wrestling was always part of the culture, too. Like, I grew up in the 80s and was a 90s high school kid, and I read comics and fantasy books and, you know, knew what was going on in the WWF at the same time. And it was all part of one rich tapestry. And we have a great team of WWE reporters here, and we do some great coverage. And so we're going to take you guys who are wrestling fans through the latest big event in WWE, which was the Royal Rumble.
Royal Rumble!
And, you know, Matt's going to lead this discussion for us because he is a hardcore wrestling fan, along with producer Jim Viscardi. And loosely, I'd say Brandon Davis over there is probably like a fair weather fan.
I'm being persuaded. I've been in and out. I grew up a gigantic wrestling fan. My dream was to be a wrestler. And then...
Okay, hold on. We'll get into you in a minute.
But I'm saying I'm just establishing my credibility here. I'm in and out. I've been in and out. After growing up a wrestling fan, I kind of faded out of it, and then for the past like 15 years, I've gone in and out, and recently, for the past few months, I've been slowly really getting back into it. So that's where I'm at with wrestling.
So can I get my
wrestling
background
now? DC. Oh,
yeah, okay. Tell me where you're from.
When I was 5.
Okay.
I was just going to say, let's just move on. I'm going to be, for those of you who don't regularly check out wrestling, I will be standing in for you. I don't check in on it as much anymore, and I'll just be asking the questions to help frame all this madness. So, Matt, take us through the Royal Rumble. What happened? What was noteworthy? Like, what was cool?
Okay, so most people who are listening to this about WWE are familiar with the Royal Rumble, but just in case, the biggest thing is one of the four big shows of WWE. Like,
is that a wrestler or an event? No, I'm just kidding. I know the big show.
Really? See? Why? Why do you do this? So Royal Rumble is known for having this giant match where 30 of the WWE superstars come down every 90 seconds. A bunch of them get in the ring, and whoever lasts the longest and gets the other last wrestler over the ropes wins. And they win a match at WrestleMania. So it's got, like, stakes. And it's just fun. And typically WWE brings all these like old stars, classic stars, new people that they sign, and they debut them here. So it's like
not this year.
It's one of the best ones. Not this year, which is true. So I have a few like essentially like my wins and losses of it. So I'm gonna just do a couple of each.
Okay.
However, I'm calling them, the wins are called Laparkas, because Laparka is a great wrestler and you should go look him up because he's fantastic. And he wears a skeleton costume, which you would like. I feel like you would like.
A Fortnite skin.
That's accurate. That scans.
Boom. Yeah, exactly.
That scans.
And then my Hall of Lame, which is the bad ones, and we will get to those too. So top one, though, and you watch too, so whenever you like hear a thing of like, oh, I saw that or whatever, chime in. So
same with you, Comic Book Nation. Let us know on Twitter.
Exactly. Yes, I do want to hear all these on Twitter. Like, if you got thoughts, whatever. So first one though is who actually won the Rumble, which gets a
which
Laparka.
Rumble?
Both. I like both winners. So the men and women. So of course, in spectacular fashion, Becky Lynch took the victory in the Women's Royal Rumble, and then Seth Rollins took the victory in the men's. Mm-hmm. But the one that had the most like ruckus around it, like the most hype, was the women's, because earlier in the pay-per-view, Becky Lynch lost to Asuka, so she lost a match, and then because Lana went down with a fake injury, Becky Lynch was able to come in at like the last minute.
Lana sold it though. I was crying for her.
I thought you said
ankles.
This thing had stakes.
It did have stakes. It's got stakes because Becky Lynch now gets a
Rocky
match
story?
At WrestleMania, and the next night at Raw challenged Ronda Rousey to that match. So now, hopefully it's just going to be them two. I don't want Charlotte. But hopefully it's going to be them two going against each other at WrestleMania.
Resulting in the only Ronda Rousey promo I've ever enjoyed.
There we go. See?
But listen, I am a huge Becky Lynch fan. I am like sold on Becky Lynch. I think she's great. She is enough to make me watch a wrestling event alone now. I think that like that's there's no. I don't think there's a male superstar there right now a current like generation male superstar that could make me want to watch Monday Night Raw, Becky Lynch. If they tell me Becky, I'm sold on Becky
Lynch.
Yeah,
you're watching.
And the women's division, I think, is so much stronger than the men's. That women's rumble was better than the men's rumble.
Oh, hands
by
down.
By far.
Yes.
By far. Agreed. It was way better.
Hands down.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And they did it without, and this will actually get a Hall of Lame, because the only problems I had with both rumbles.
Zelina Vega under the ring?
Actually, I kind of thought that was funny, and we got a Hornswoggle appearance, which is amazing. You know who Hornswoggle is?
I have no idea.
Hornswoggle is a small wrestler who wears a leprechaun outfit occasionally.
Oh, I do.
Under the
it's
ring.
One of those things that you're like, how does WWE still get away with this one?
And I didn't want to laugh. I didn't want to laugh at it, but it made me laugh, and I chuckled, and then he chased the Zelina Vega from underneath the ring out.
So that was pretty woke.
It was woke. It was very woke.
Everything about it was wrong.
So Jeff Jarrett was the literal only, from what I recall, and correct me if I'm wrong, but he was the only legacy, like classic legend star that was in either of the Rumbles.
How long has Samoa Joe been around?
Kurt Angle's, but Kurt Angle's still a part of the current program. Yeah, so I don't necessarily count
him. Is Samoa Joe active right now?
Mm-hmm. He was in there.
Yeah, but he's like active on Monday Night Raw and stuff.
He choked out Kurt Hawkins.
Oh.
Yeah, he kept putting that choke on to like everybody on the planet. He had no other move.
Yeah, he did choke out everybody.
He choked everybody out. So Jeff Jarrett comes out at the beginning, and I was like, okay, this is fine. And then we keep going, and the talent that came into the ring.
Jeff Jarrett jobbed to Elias with the guitar shot.
See, but that's the only part of it.
Producer
that makes
Jim's
sense.
Party feels some kind of way about this, people.
Because I felt like he was passing on the mantle of guitar shots. Because that was Jeff Jarrett's thing, right? He sang.
But then, like, the next night, him and Road Dogg came out, and I was just like, oof.
That was
rough.
It's been
way too long, Road Dogg. Oh, you didn't know that I got old. I'm
the
sorry.
The fact that they sang was that.
That was tough, man. Them singing was, that didn't pay off. I read the comments on the video on YouTube, on WWE's YouTube account. People loved it.
Yeah, I know.
So, do
more power
think,
to you.
But I was, that's one of those where I would flip the channel.
But like, it's one of those, I want a few. I don't want it to overtake it. And I don't need Undertaker. But I need a DDP.
Listen, you bring Undertaker in, the next person reaches the ring before he does in the Royal Rumble. That's you. And the event is already long enough. So you better put him in like seventh or eighth.
Man, the Undertaker, how long before they're just like wheeling out an actual like corpse that didn't need Undertaker to the ring?
Honestly, the last time he was in the ring, it was close.
Yeah, it was pretty
rough. It was very close.
It's pretty rough.
But even then, like, I didn't think the Men's Royal Rumble had any really good surprises at all. I kind of enjoyed the New Day's little stunts on not getting eliminated.
Hey,
those were fun.
Hey, I rep for New Day because there's a Kofi and we are Legion. We're like a hive.
That's fair.
So here's the thing.
But let me ask you this, man. What would be a good surprise besides someone like Batista or The Rock or Stone?
But I want Batista. I was
so
hoping
if they
for
bring
Batista.
Batista back. They bring Batista back and he enters and he loses.
That's fine.
Was it worth it?
Most people who enter. Totally.
I mean, I would have been thrilled. I would have jumped off the couch if I saw Batista, The Rock, Stone Cold, anybody from the Attitude.
He was there.
You could have had HBK
so
in there.
Still, that you just hitting this. Never knew.
Yeah, I want some that's part of the fun of it, you know. Every now and then, like when they brought Boogeyman in or, you know, whatever, right? That's he's gonna go out the next match, but you don't care. But like, instead of, now what I will say as a positive, because I like to be positive,
oh boy,
is that yes, there weren't stars of that caliber. However, the people that came from NXT, NXT UK, and the Mae Young Classic, they all had starring
shots. But you had to be
shots.
A deep cut fan to enjoy
Aleister
that.
Aleister Black comes out, that's a pop.
No one cares about Aleister Black.
Johnny Gargano, no one cared about.
No, people care about Johnny Gargano. They don't care.
They did not. It was silent. It was silent.
What sound, like hearing this, if you're not like a hardcore wrestling fan? It's like Mr. Doodah came out and choked out.
I'm going to point something out.
And then the Little Dipper jumped off the top rope.
Listen.
And kicked Sheamus' little helper in the shin.
I think that the women's division is so much stronger than the men's division, but the stunt with Nia Jax at the end, I was like, this is stupid. I hated that. I thought it was kind of entertaining to like the concept of Rey Mysterio and Randy Orton and everybody having to like gang up to eliminate her to make her out as this huge, strong superstar. But I was just like, That's your end here. Like that, Dolph Ziggler was kind of a surprise, I guess, since he's supposed to not be, he's supposed to be on hiatus with WWE. But like, for R-Truth, when R-Truth came out 30, I was like, really, this is it? And then Nia Jax came out and pulled the same thing she pulled with Lana. I was like, all right, so this guy's not going to be able to compete, so they're going to have a surprise 30th contender because for some reason Nia Jax took out R-Truth. And then it was Nia Jax. And I was like, why? She's not going to go headline WrestleMania. In no world is Nia Jax going to win the Rumble. In no world is Nia Jax going to compete. Maybe somewhere down the line she gets somehow a female superstar gets a shot at the WWE Championship with a male superstar. I'm not saying that's out of the realm of possibilities. It was not going to happen this weekend with Nia Jax at the Royal Rumble. And I was like, at no point was I convinced that was possible. So I was like, give me someone better, please. They didn't. I was disappointed.
So I need to know.
Suspect it could have been staged.
Stop it.
So I know we need to move on to. However, what I will say is
that wrap this up for us. I'm lost in a whirlwind of names and people.
I am split on Nia's thing because I too was like, oh man, that's lame. Because I was hoping they would do the same thing with Becky. You'd come out, it would be Kenny Omega, and that, of course, Batista. I lost big on that. Batista, whatever. I thought I'd move on to that. When she went in, though, I love the idea behind it. I love the idea of taking a female wrestler and putting her in the ring with the men and going, no, I can hold my own in this ring. I love the idea behind it. Nia Jax is not the right character or the right person to do that with because the audience hates her.
And I know so, WWE is staged and scripted, but like they're trying to take this realistic approach, as we kind of saw in the awful Daniel Bryan AJ Styles match. Yeah, like they want to do like technical type stuff. Physically, that is not realistic.
I mean, I could see her taking out R-Truth. I could see her taking out Ziggler.
I don't fight it. I feel Randy Orton, a guy like
Randy Orton. No, but then
Randy
again,
Orton would not have trouble beating up Nia Jax.
That's, yeah, I agree. I think. I love the idea behind it. I just don't think it was executed well. Also, can I just give a quick props to Casey, and I always mess up her last name when I say it, Cantazaro, who stole the show from both Kofi and Naomi and had the best get back in the ring.
The handstand.
Wait, the Ninja Warrior girl?
She got eliminated, and she did a full handstand outside the ring because she got she didn't get eliminated. She went over the top rope and walked back to the ring on her hands
and then pulled herself up like with pure core to get on the pylon. She's a beast. And then grab that.
Yeah, she wrapped her legs around the pylon and did a sit-up to get back in the ring.
I was like, that's impressive.
I saw her on G Street in San Diego 1 year during Comic-Con, and I was so starstruck.
And congrats to R-Truth on the consolation prize.
All right, well, that wraps it up for Royal Rumble and WWE. I can't say that I know anything now more than when we started, but...
you know who Hornswoggle is?
Yeah, I do know who Hornswoggle is.
That's little. WWE. I mean, that's big.
Somebody probably needs to go down there and do some woke review of that place, but moving right along. Now, to go from wrestling to a much also more lighthearted topic. So...
Oh,
you might have heard, if you're in any way involved in comic book or geek culture, then you've probably heard both kind of at the end of last year and now again this week, some of the controversy that's come up with real-time host Bill Maher, who hosts, like I said, Real Time with Bill Maher on HBO. Bill Maher's been kind of going in on comic book culture ever since Stan Lee died. He at first kind of indicated in a blog because his show was off when Lee passed and, you know, there were all these celebrations of Stan Lee's life and his show was on a break. And so he wrote this blog kind of not condemning Stan Lee, but saying that he created a culture that basically has made a generation of people more infantile into adulthood and created this kind of arrested development culture that is responsible for a lot of the problems we now have. He did some kind of way to link us to the election of Trump and all this stuff, and people got heated. So his show is back now, and at the end of every show, he does a segment called New Rules, where it's basically a soapbox where he gets to do a whole diatribe about something or another. And this week, he decided that, you know, in the midst of all the corruption and government stuff and political stuff that is going on currently, he was going to come for comic book culture fans.
John Oliver, he is not.
Yeah, no. So he put together this whole New Rules, just basically coming at it. And I'll just read you some of the choice quotes that I pulled out of this little segment he said. Okay, here we go. And this is Bill Maher, and I'll try to put on my best smarmy Bill Maher voice. I'm agnostic on Stan Lee. I didn't read comic books. I didn't even read them when I was a child. What I'm saying is, a culture that thinks that comic books and comic book movies are profound meditations on the human condition is a dumb effing culture. He later said, you can if you want, like the exact same things you liked when you were 10.
But if you do, you need to grow up. That was the point of my blog. I'm not glad Stan Lee is dead. I'm sad you're alive. And that was kind of the capper for his new rules. So, basically, let me just first say, I am a Bill Maher fan. I know a lot of people who have heard this within comic book culture, which is funny. Their first reaction is, who the F is Bill Maher? And why is he saying anything?
Yeah.
And that's fair enough. I am a Bill Maher fan. I like him. I like his shows. I've liked him since the Politically Incorrect days. I like his kind of unbridled take on things like politics. I like, and I like his format of his show, which, you know, is kind of to the left leaning, but also balances and brings people from the right. Like Ann Coulter was on this same show where they're dissing Stanley. So I like his show. I do not like Bill Maher about this. I think he's absolutely wrong. I think he's, you know, full of crap in a lot of ways. And when he first did the blog post, I went on Twitter and it got a good response and just kind of snarkily said to him, like, basically saying, you know, when like a aging, childless, unmarried pothead tells you about growing up, you should probably stop and listen. And I do think, you know, without taking personal shots at Bill Maher, like, I think what he's saying is wrong. I think comic books, I do think there is some truth to what he's saying. I don't think you can throw the baby out with the bathwater with the whole culture. That's ridiculous. And like I said, there's a lot of ways and you could come at Bill Maher, who doesn't believe in getting married or having children and just likes to sit around and, you know, feed his ego through his show and smoke pot all day and say, like, what do you have to tell me about growing up or like what's childish? But, you know, let's just leave that aside. What I will say is I think it's hard to argue at this point that comic books can't be higher forms of literature or cinema. I mean, that's just an asinine comment. You're living in like the early 2000s trying to make that argument. You are ignoring, you know, plenty of ample evidence in front of your face that says there are great literary minds who put their efforts into comic books, as well as films. Like, if you're an artist, your mode of expression, you don't really rank your mode of expression. Like if you were Alan Moore and you write a good book or you write a good graphic novel, or Neil Gaiman is another example, you write a good book or a good graphic novel, you write Sandman or American Gods, and the culture has embraced both, and both have found their way into the culture and really inspired people. I think comic books are, and I make this argument a lot because it comes up with the movies a lot. There's a lot of misunderstanding about comic books and what they are as an art form and as a literary art form. They are wholly unique because they are what are called like butterfly novels. A comic book is basically something, an idea, a fantastical idea that somebody works on. Then they hand it over to a new creative team of people and say, now put your stamp on it. And then they change it and mold it and tweak it. And then they do it for a while and then they hand it to somebody else and it gets passed on through this culture. As we've gone on, thankfully, there's more and more diverse kind of creative influences getting put into these comic book characters, new characters of a wide array being created. They update and change with times to reflect the times and to reflect themes of the times. It's a very unique medium. It has endured for so long for a reason, and it's not just because it sells kids' cereal.
Yeah.
Comic books are like video games, and I think we're in a unique place in history in which they've evolved with us as we've grown up.
Yes.
Like, games have gotten more sophisticated as we've gotten older, and same thing with comic books. There's a level of comic book I don't read now versus one I do read versus when I was a kid, I read that other one and didn't bother with the ones that I read now. So I think it is kind of crazy of him to say this. Like I said, I think if you were making this argument in the 2000s, it was good. As a also literary nerd, I will also point out that he was kind of at one point, Bill Maher was kind of citing people, great literary greats, who are people we should read. First of all, he threw in Michael Eric Dyson, which I'm nice to plug your buddy's book, but you know, get out of here. Trying to like throw that out here is the same kind of thing. But he mentioned Herman Melville in Moby Dick, which is funny because Herman Melville, if you know anything. And he's saying these are people who were rock stars and, you know, should still be. Herman Melville in Moby Dick was not appreciated in his day. It's like the horror story of being a writer. Like, Moby Dick was looked at as a not literature, as a piece of crap, because it was mostly just details about whaling and the whaling industry. Is like, if you ever read that book, that's what a lot of it is in the beginning up until like the very end with the whale hunting. And he died unpopular in Moby Dick and thinking it was a failure for decades before that book, like when whaling ended and that whole culture disappeared and started to disappear. And then it became this very important kind of capture of that history before it became this larger story with the themes about obsession and stuff. So like literature is often, not even like sometimes, often not even appreciated for what it is in its day. It takes time and space and scope and changes in time to kind of make you realize how prophetic or insightful it was. And comic books can be the same way. So trying to kind of conflate this idea that, you know, literature comes out and is instantly awesome and is sophisticated and everybody should appreciate it is so untrue. And it just shows that you maybe don't have the grip on this that you should, Bill Maher, and maybe stick to your lanes.
So, unless you have a prevailing thought, I was going to jump in.
Oh, I have a good bit to say, but you can take it
away. I feel like he's about to go on a tirade.
Okay, so for me, I come from the Kofi camp of I've been a Bill Maher fan for a long time. I was until the last few years. I enjoyed Politically Incorrect, Real Time. I enjoyed his at times brash, but always pleasantly unfiltered take on politics, on things, directions we should be moving towards. And as my also political views have kind of changed over time, I still found ways that even though I didn't agree with him half the time, I still found nuggets of like, you know, but he makes a good point here. Over the last few years though, that has changed. And I even tweeted the night like this all happened. I feel like with Bill Maher, he left nuance behind a couple years ago. Everything started to feel like the ramblings of an old man. Someone very much he became the caricature of get off my lawn, right? That's how he's become more and more. Even on his show, he brings on conservative viewpointed people and then preaches over them and yells at them. And typically, most often than not, they're punching bags. Aside from the ones that can actually are just as bad as he is, Ann Coulter, right? I saw that conversation. They're just as bad. He's as extreme as the people he preaches against. So over the last few years, his viewpoints have become more and more muted to me.
The respect meter's gone down.
It is, because he's... And so now when he gets to this, he's literally... That's desperation. That's all it reeks of. It's a thing of being relevant and snarky because you can't
I was going to ask, do you think... I mean, he saw the response the blog post got.
Yeah.
And
that's stupid, right?
At the end of the day, he runs a show that... makes its bones on publicity, right?
Yeah.
So you see this as a calculated move.
I see that as a calculated... My biggest thing is not actually... My biggest disagreement with it is not the literature and comic side. Though I agree with like your points. Yeah. I find a lot of flaws in that just as a topic as itself. But my issues with it, because later on in that same video, he goes on to expound on that and plug away at the fact that these people... And he called out like Kevin Smith and some other people, right? But he talks about this people, this group of people that can't be adults. He has a problem with the word adulting. He has a problem with a lot of things of this, like the generations that have come since. And he looks at them as if you can't be, and he says things along these lines, essentially that you can't be a fully functional adult and still like things that you liked in your childhood. He talks about that a couple times of like growing up. I've got, you know, I'm not going to say it here, but he says a couple things along those lines. And my issue, that is the part that's insulting. Someone who's raised a daughter, to someone who has a family, to someone who's well-liked, who's been able to function in society and is relatively intelligent. I'm not stunted in emotional growth. I'm not stunted in intellect. So to call someone like me that and to say that I cannot function in society purely because of the fact that I tend to like a character that's got a helmet and a blue and red costume is insulting. That's insulting
to me. You also touched on something that I don't think I pulled out the first time that's important. It's like his view about that, I never realized it until you just said, you know, somebody raising a daughter. Like his view on that totally misses the entire perspective of parenting, right?
Yeah.
Which is... one of the great joys, if you talk to any parent, was, you know, the lack of money, the lack of sleep, and all that other crazy stuff you have to deal with. But one of the great joys for any parent is how having a kid makes things that you loved in your childhood new again.
Yeah.
Because you get to or at least try. Your kids could totally reject them, but you can try to reintroduce them to things that you loved as a child. And when it clicks and they love things, like, it's one of the best bonding experiences you can have. And so, like, yeah, I mean, like, every Comic-Con dad who's with his kid and in costume and that, I don't look at that guy and be like, man, what an adult loser. I'm like, what a great effing dad that guy is.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. Goes the extra mile, you know, Batman kid, like, you know, those parents, things like that. Like, should have been like, son, you're going to die. Let's just start focusing on less childish things. Like,
yes. That's it, man.
Like,
I don't know where the line from childhood to adult ends. Like, what year do you get to in your life where you're like, oh, I'm an adult now. I'm a 27-year-old guy, 27-year-old single guy, no kids. I am still in love with comic books and the characters. My apartment is covered in Hot Toys figures and Legends figures and Lego figures. Dude, like, I've had a girl come over and take a picture of my shelf because she's like, I've never seen something like this before. And I'm like, yeah, I'm a 27-year-old guy. I love all that stuff. Does that make me a kid? No, I'm pretty sure I'm doing okay. I have the Comic Book Nation podcast I'm on, so I think I turned out okay. But no, like, dude.
Nice plug.
Always be plugged.
All right, congratulations, Bill Mayer, Bill Maher. I didn't know how to say his name until I heard you say it because I didn't listen to the guy. Clearly quite successful at his job, so good for you, Bill. It worked. We're talking about you. Your shock value paid off. You hit an audience that doesn't otherwise talk about you, so here we are doing what you wanted us to do. And I get it. Like, it's media. I know a thing or two about clickbait. I've learned you should actively avoid it because you're just going to piss people off. Sometimes pissing people off works for some people.
We also know about flaming up some fans and getting them to go to war.
It's just like we talked about earlier. Sometimes you piss the wrong people off. It could cost you. But to do this with Stan Lee was the most disgusting and awful time to do that. Stan Lee stood as a symbol for incredible things. He was an inspirational person. He helped build something. He was kind of he had other people helping him, but he was the figure that built something. He got people to believe in something. He grinded. He worked. He was creative. He didn't give up what he wanted to do. And in doing that, he created a major product, one of the biggest businesses in the world. But he also created characters, not only that people attach to, that they find themselves in, and they find ways to make themselves better as a result of seeing them. But he created characters like the X-Men at a time where the world was going through some real serious stuff, where minorities were having a really hard time in the world and they weren't being represented. And he created the X-Men to say, you know what? We can do that. And then other characters that Stan Lee helped create and Marvel Comics helped create, created a character that Ryan Coogler as a kid got to walk into a comic book shop and see himself in. And say, I like that character. And guess what? Ryan Coogler went on. He made a movie about it. It's one of the highest grossing movies of all time. It was a cultural phenomenon. Yep. And now it's nominated for Best Picture at the Oscars. So tell me how that's child's play.
Yeah, and you see something like Chadwick Boseman's speech at the SAG Awards, and it's like, you know, that all roots back to Stan Lee.
Tell me how that's child's play. I think that's stupid, idiotic. Congratulations. We talked about you. That's all I have to say about it.
Now that we've railed against Bill Maher, let's take a couple of minutes to end this up. We will talk about maybe some, like, I try to be fair and like I try to be even keeled and just see the both sides of things because it's good for perspective and it's part of my adulting. So here we go. I mean, there is some truth to what he has said in the sense that there are people that take it too far. And I'll give you an example. I was at Toy Fair a couple years ago in Manhattan, and it was when they were kind of introducing the Star Wars Legends, the Black Series. They were introducing a new line, and they were reintroducing Transformers as a big new line where it was when they were taking Transformers finally back to the simple design, and I was in the room, and these were like the two major headlining events of this Toy Fair. When they got to Transformers, okay? I don't think I've ever been so disturbed at seeing a room full of grown men like get so upset when like the guy was just trying to go through like what the troubles at Hasbro had been with like these overly complex Transformers. And you could just hear people in the crowd. And these are reporters. This is not like a public event. Like flipping out about it, like screaming and like, you know. And then when they showed them like the simplistic ones, people were like falling out in excitement and like fainting and stuff like that. And this was like a room of professional. Seriously? Yeah. Oh my God. Like not literally fainting, but they were just like, they were swooning, you know.
Like a Benny Hinn convention.
They were feeling some kind of way. And it was like, and I've also been at like toy fairs where, or like, you know, events where they give away the toys at the end and seen a room full of grown people tear each other apart to get their hands on action figures. And like, yeah, that's a little extreme.
Turbo Man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I have to get Turbo Man.
Like straight up jingle all the way. Like, yeah.
But if this, I
and like that level of it is like when it becomes, and when you get to the toxic fandom, the people like the Star Wars people who are ruining actors' lives.
People do that for sports.
Oh, I know. I get it. It's the same thing. Like, but I'm just saying, in this case, calling that out and saying, sure. Yeah, that's a little too childish. Like, you gotta separate yourself. Like,
no, it worked.
Like, I think all of us, I mean, we work at a place called comicbook.com, right? But if there's something up with, like, or, like, real things happening in my life, like, I also know how to switch gears from, like, what new underwear Captain America's getting to, like, the real stuff I gotta deal with my family or my kids or anything. And I know how to walk and chew gum. I mean, we all have to come to work. It's... We have to literally come to work and deal with a bunch of fantasy every day while dealing with real stuff right outside these doors all the time.
Yeah.
And it's not like I come in here and retreat and be like, do a pirouette into the room and be like, here we are, and I'm a kid again, and like, let's just forget all our problems. Like,
I was writing a Batman article.
We literally look up Captain America's underwear and things that are happening in politics, like side by side all day, and we're all over the place yelling about it in this office. So,
at the same time, I do just want to say, I think that the crowd of grown individuals and young individuals at a Comic-Con event is the most welcoming, friendly crowd you're going to find anywhere.
You're talking about behavior, not smell, correct?
Couple showers to be had, but listen, sleeping on the sidewalk is no easy task. Yeah. I get it, and it's San Diego, it's hot. But like, dude, you're not going to go, you look at social media after a playoff game and like, there's some viral posts about fans fighting in the stands. I've never seen people get in a fight at San Diego Comic-Con.
Never the city of Philadelphia.
It's go Eagles, but current Super Bowl champions for a couple more days.
Yeah.
But like the crowd at this event, no matter the age, we've been trained by these things we like and the people who also like it to be friendly and welcoming, and it's the best crowd. There is no audience like our audience. Like, it's the friendliest, best group of people. And sure, there's some duds in the bunch that could have been better people, and that's in every group. Like, you're always going to have somebody who gets focused on because they're the one that people are, they're more fun to talk about than the one that is everyone else that is very welcoming and kind and generous and doing it right.
Yeah, I mean, we could make this, I mean, it could, do you think, I mean, is it fair to say you can make this argument that Bill Maher's making to anybody who takes the thing they're into too seriously?
Yes.
Yeah.
In like anything.
Sports or the thing that he's into, politics, right? Like, if a person who's like, you've seen people who are just walking, like, slogans for every, you know, new political headline that comes out. Like, nobody wants to be that person.
I've seen way more fights at political rallies than at San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, growing up is kind of a loaded term, isn't it? Like, what's childish versus what's not. I don't think that, like you said, liking something I've liked. I mean, it's kind of specious to say that, you know, Captain America or the Avengers or all that stuff is the same as it was when I was a kid.
No, it evolves. Is the WWE? We just talked about it. Yeah. I grew up a fan of WWE.
Yeah,
I'm
mean,
still a
I
fan
was
going to
tie this all together by saying it's crazy that a man could come for comic book culture, but like totally leave wrestling culture. Where grown adults oil up and slap fight, and like nobody has a problem with that.
I did love Kevin Smith's response.
To
when he posted the clip of him being on
if you haven't followed this, Kevin Smith posted a great response in which it shows him just like leaning into a picture with Bill Maher and him just basically being like, oh, I know Bill talks tough, but like,
and then the
he
video
loves
was
to
great.
Smoke weed with me and just like he's a pussycat when you meet It's okay. Always different when you stop being a keyboard warrior.
Is it definitely Maher and not Mayer?
I'm not sure. Bill Maher. Everybody says Bill Maher.
I was just kidding. I genuinely don't know.
But so. I agree with your previous point though of there are those. Yes, we've all encountered people
the man children or the
but I see those people at Walmart and they have nothing to do with comics.
You see a lot of things at Walmart.
See people at Walmart
Walmart's a different
story.
Who can't
get themselves out of their sweats and their flip flops.
I see
like,
those people. Nothing to do with comics.
Okay, so people who need a shower more just waited in line for Hall H overnight or like 25% of the Walmart.
Exactly. And it's just like,
I don't know which one.
Yeah, like I said, growing up is a very loaded term about, like, what it is. In adulting, things like adulting, that's not... I mean, he just tries to tie these things together that just don't tie together.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't comic book culture that got Trump elected.
Yes.
If anything, comic book culture is probably made up of more people who did not do that. Like, yeah. As opposed, like, we can read fantasy stories, but, like, we know fantasy life from real life, too. Like, in real things from fake things and stuff like that. Yeah, I don't even know where I'm just like spiraling out in my anger right now.
Iron Man 1, Tony Stark would have voted for Trump. I don't think Avengers Infinity War, Tony Stark would have voted for Trump.
Man, that
well, I don't know. He's making a lot of money.
That bow is impressive.
Is that?
Yeah, he wants those tax breaks. You know, you never know with Tony.
That's true. He is like the 1%.
It's all about the money. But like, yeah. And just like, yeah, like I'm saying, like tying together things like the adulting trend to being... infantile or like arrested development from comic book culture. I don't even know if those are the same audiences. Everybody who's like 25 to 30 right now loves to say like adulting. It's just part of their generation. Yeah, it's part of the hashtag generation.
Well, it's like anything. Like the music he probably liked back when he was younger was not held to the same respect that it is now. It's because things change, right? It's every genre of it's anything. It's those movies of that time. It's those that music of the time. It's artistic expression. It always changes with you. And when you grow up with it, you assume it's normal. So you identify with it. It's every generation has this. So I don't understand like how clueless someone can be to that fact. It hasn't changed.
My question in all this is, can we get Cardi B to defend comic book culture the way she's jumped into political culture? Because I feel like we need her right now.
Cardi
Bill Maher needs to be threatened to be dog walked, maybe, and he'll settle down. It seems to be an effective policy we're exploring in 2019. Well,
she's very intense, and those nails are very. I'm kind of scared of
her. Can Bill Maher get Joe Budden to unretire? Can I get a verse? I just want him to respond to Eminem. That's all I want. Can I make that happen? Thank you.
Well, I think to wrap this all up, you know, we try to keep a clean podcast here, but we can just say, you know, suck a lemon, Bill Maher. We'll use some 1950s
tunes. There it is.
Suck a lemon on this.
He'll understand that.
I mean, I'm a tune into real time again, so I don't know what effect this had, but like, you're wrong for this, Bill. Like, that's about it.
I hope this is the last time we talk about him on this podcast.
I hope so too. Depends how much juice he's getting out.
I'm so mad that he got 30 minutes from us.
Hey, I'm like Migos. I got to defend the culture.
Scrip, scrip.
Oh God. Don't bring the mumbles into this.
Why, man?
You get like
Bill Maher had to see that
like a Bill Maher Flair drip. I'll be the hype man in the back.
Oh, there it is. You brought it back home. Wait a minute.
All right. Let's get out of here. So that's going to do it for us today here at Comic Book Nation. I want to thank you for rocking with us. I am your host, Kofi Outlaw, and you can find me on Twitter at KofiOutlaw.com.
You can find me on at MattMuellerCB.
And you can find me on all of social media at Brandon Davis PD and on our Comic Book Now show, facebook.com/comicbooknow, where After the Dead comes back this Sunday, next Sunday, February 10th, for a new episode of the same page, facebook.com/comicbooknow, and right here on the Comic Book Nation podcast.
And as for us here at Comic Book Nation, we will be posting new episodes every Wednesday and Friday now that we are up and running. And there are several ways you can listen to us. You can listen to us when we post new episodes on the player on comicbook.com. You can subscribe to this RSS feed we have going, and there's a link in our episode posts that you can just click and subscribe to, which is probably a good, easy way to do it. You can listen to us on Spotify or on Stitcher, and we have links in the posts that will take you to exactly where you need to be. And if you're an iTunes user, we will have that coming soon. So after the show, you can always follow and keep discussing the things we've been discussing at the Comic Book Nation hashtag, which is just hashtag Comic Book Nation. Or you can reach out to any one of us at our Twitter handles, which we just gave you, or comicbook.com at comicbook. And we'd love to keep talking with you guys as we go through the show. Like we said, it's meant to be interactive and take us from behind off the desk and help us talk about things in a deeper fashion and also interact with you. So be sure to reach out. Thank you, and we'll see you next episode.